Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM, but always stay up to date with everything happening here at the station by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
My company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday, of course, host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. VSiN's Betting Tailgate Show, weekends, 9 a.m., VSiN Primetime. Download the VSiN Watch. I'll get it right one of these times. Also, VSiN has their ultimate primer for the NCAA tournament. I've already got my copy. It is VSiN's March Mania Betting Guide, the Pro Edition for Sharp Week. It's available now. Go get your copy on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
It sounds like you're introducing Apollo Creed and Rocky IV when you introduce me.
I'm like Chris Jericho reading the 1001 Moves.
What's up, man? I'm fired up, ready to rock and roll. It's that time of year when we've got optimism on the brain. You've got all the right picks. You've got all the right bets. Everything's going to be perfect until Louisville beats Creighton or Creighton beats Louisville, depending on how you picked the first game of the bracket. But no, it starts sort of tonight. But man, it's the best time of year, man. It really is. We talked about it a bit last week. I am a college football fan number one, but these next 3 weeks are my favorite weeks of the sports calendar.
There's just nothing quite like having a fresh bracket in your hand. Nope. It's hope springs eternal. So we'll get into a few of the questions that we have about the tournament. We'll discuss that to start the program. Joe Rexroad's going to join the program. He, of course, was at the SEC tournament. We'll get his thoughts on the SEC teams in the field. Also get into the list. We'll get into tonight's first four. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I think, Tim, really the first question that I have for you, and I don't feel like I've had this vibe in a really long time. I'm really worried that this is going to be a chalky tournament.
So I think it might be, but I don't think it will be in the middle of the bracket, because I really think the mid-majors this year are very strong, and obviously Memphis is part of that crew. Because the way I look at it, you look at Memphis, you look at the teams from the Mountain West, which I know you have your curiosity.
Oh, I immediately scrolled to the conference sections, and I was like, no porn tonight. All I need to do is read these stats because it just tells me what I've known.
But you've got Drake, you've got UC San Diego, you've got Yale, VCU, Liberty, you know, McNeese State, High Point, Akron. You've got some really good mid-majors and I think vulnerable kind of 4, 5, and 6 seeds. But to your overall point of the possibility of it being chalky, I did have a hard time finding ways to have one seeds knocked off. Specifically Duke. I think Duke's road. I guess if they played Arizona, that could be tricky in the Sweet 16. Houston's got quite the speed bump potentially looming if Gonzaga beats Georgia. Auburn obviously would have a possible showdown against a team like Louisville, you know, just like an hour away from where they reside. And then, dude, I'll say this, man. The West region is brutal. Is absolutely brutal.
But it rules.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, I look at the West, and it's by far my favorite region. You've got Patino, you've got Calipari, you've got Bill Self, you've got a Texas Tech team that I think, when healthy, is a top five team in the country. You've got probably my favorite mid-major in Drake in there. You've got a Maryland team that has, in my opinion, an elite starting five. You've got a Grand Canyon team that, if they didn't shoot as poorly as they did last year in the second round, I think they would have beaten Alabama. You've got a Colorado State team that plays Memphis, of course, that is as hot as almost any team in the country coming in. And you've got, oh, by the way, the defending two-time champ UConn and the hottest team in the country that everybody now is picking to win the title. I mean, the West region is amazing, absolutely amazing.
And I think that's kind of where I struggle, because I think, for me, the tournament actually starts with Florida, because there's a lot of reasons to actually not like Florida, and don't like let your eyes fool you. They have a young head coach that I believe still, because I don't think San Francisco, I don't think he's won a tournament game at San Francisco, and I know he didn't win last year, but they were injured, whatnot. So an inexperienced young coach, a team that has largely been assembled, and then it's the team that everyone is like, oh my God, watch out for them.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I just find myself wondering, it's like, aren't the similarities there between them and UConn when they won their first title under Dan Hurley, in which your eyes tell you this team's incredible. They kind of had some stumbles in like the January part of the calendar, but they're pretty much at full strength. I think Hurley had maybe won one game at Rhode Island, but he had not won a tournament game at UConn. And like all the things that kind of held true for Florida, to me, hold true for that UConn team. Multiple bigs that are problems. Really good perimeter defense. Good guard play. Like that's kind of where I struggle, because history and your, you know, just knowing how the tournament works says Florida, to me, could be a little vulnerable, but simply because everybody's like, oh my God, this is the best team in the country, whether or not the rankings say so. But I also am having a very tough time ignoring what my eyes tell me, which is they have been smoking people and smoking really good teams. And I said this to Cobb, because Cobb covered the tournament in Nashville last week. I was not disappointed in what Tennessee showed on Sunday. I thought they could have gotten run out of the building multiple times. But it kind of spoke to just, that's what I think Florida has been, is they're just kind of a machine right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long ways away from when they went to Tennessee and were held to 44 points. I mean, that was a spot where, you know, Tennessee, but
both
was,
teams did that to each other at home.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
Florida did it to Tennessee when Tennessee was kind of hot, right, and then Tennessee returned the favor.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then in the SEC championship game, it was as impressive as a performance as you've seen in a while. Look, it's hard to push back on what we've seen from Florida. Since their loss to Georgia on the road, they hosted Texas A&M, won by, you know, 19. They go on the road to Tuscaloosa, drop 99 on Alabama. They wrap up the regular season smashing Ole Miss. I mean, they've just beaten...
They ran away and hid from Alabama.
I mean, they've just smoked tournament teams. So, yeah, I can't... You know, it was funny. I was sitting at dinner last night. We didn't have the sound on, but CBS Sports Network was doing, you know, a breakdown. I said, does Florida have any weaknesses? And I'm like, man, it does feel a little bit like, to me, And maybe you're onto something. Maybe this team is the last 2 years UConn's, or more so 2 years ago UConn. But man, it feels like we're getting into the range of like, this Florida team is unstoppable. But I think the point that you make is also fair. Like, Todd Golden has never won an NCAA tournament game before as a head coach, right? Lost last year in the first round and lost when they were at San Francisco.
I think it was to Murray State. Is that right?
Last year?
No. Last year they lost to Colorado. That was a heck of a game. That was here in I think that was here in Memphis.
Yeah, they lost to Murray State when they were at San Fran.
No, I think that was
a 7-10 game.
Yeah, but the 7-10 game is... I don't know, that game wasn't a Memphis, but that was a heck of a basketball game. And then,
oh yeah, it was awesome.
They lost their best player before, so I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying like, oh, this guy can't get it done, but
it was in Indianapolis, by the way.
Yeah, it was the Memphis regions were Clemson, Baylor, Houston. I think we had A&M. Yeah, we had, because Houston played A&M, and that was the region we had. All right, then the other question that I had for you. Are we getting a little too nitpicky with Auburn?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, they went from the team that can't be beaten, and then when they lose 3 of 4, it's like, yeah, they're gonna get beaten by Louisville, you know? Yeah, I think they're certainly, I would say, I mean, look, they're not playing at the peak of their powers like they were in January when it looked like nobody could come anywhere near them. And now you look at, I mean, you know, let's be real here. Let's talk out the games they lost, okay? They lose to Texas A&M on senior night when Texas A&M's kind of desperate. I think they had lost like 4 in a row.
Yeah, they needed that game badly.
Auburn had just wrapped up the outright SEC crown, and you're at home and you're facing an incredibly physical Texas A&M team. That was going to be a buzzsaw. And that was a game I think we talked about on this show. That was a spot that I loved Texas A&M in. Okay, you lose at home to Alabama in a revenge spot against your arch rival who, you know, look, Alabama, if they're flowing offensively, they're the best team in the country. Now, it's very rare that they're at that elite level, but that's at their best, they can beat anybody in the country. I am convinced of that. But I think they're also very vulnerable, Alabama is, as we saw when they were at home against Auburn and they went down big in that one. So you lose those two games. You beat Ole Miss in a bit of a grinder. And then, I don't know, man. It's just, for me, I'm not trying to make excuses for Auburn, but like, I think we're kind of start getting to the point where if you're locked up to the number one overall seed, like, is it hard to kind of get motivated for these games?
Well, I honestly wondered in the back of my mind, was Bruce Pearl okay with maybe taking a loss? Hey, we're out of here on Saturday. Last year, we made it all the way to Sunday. We win the conference tournament. We got into, I think Broome got tossed in that Yale game. One of his bigs got tossed in the Yale game. I just kept wondering, he's like, you know what? Beat Ole Miss. Let's get back home, and then let's go get ready for next week.
I think it was it Baker Mazzara?
I was thinking of in the Yale game last year.
Yeah, I think it was him. He only played 3 minutes.
Yeah, he got tossed.
Yeah, that's
which might be a trend. Which, in fairness, might be on the board in the next 6 games.
So, yeah, and that's a bigger picture thing too, which is just, and I know there's a lot of folks out there, you know, outside of the obvious low-hanging fruit of UNC. It's like, we say it every year, and it just happens every year. Like, if you're Dusty May, you're like, cool, we just played 3 games in 3 days. We beat a 3 seed in Wisconsin, a 4 seed in Maryland, and a 4 seed in Purdue in successive days. And our reward is to get our asses shipped out to Denver to take on arguably the best 12 seed in the field, if not the best 12 seed in a long, long time based off of metrics in UC San Diego.
Like, they don't have a guy over 6'4".
What? 6'8". What's the point?
And shoes.
What's the point of these conference tournaments in the majors? It makes no sense.
You know the answer to that.
Well, it's money.
But I mean, like, honestly,
That's
they
the
are,
about-
but they're liars. They're like, oh, you know, we had two brackets. No, you didn't. You had two brackets in case UAB beat Memphis.
Yeah, that was my big takeaway. My overreaction yesterday was all the people that are mad at about North Carolina, you should actually be mad at UAB. And I say this as somebody that loves Andy Kennedy. And I thought the problem on Saturday was Memphis was right for the taking there. You don't have your starting point guard. You don't even have your backup point guard. And honestly, like the thing that stood out watching that game was like Andy Kennedy wanted it more than his players. And Memphis was the team that you kind of thought would be a little sleepy. They were kicking it around a bit, but they were still being physical. And they had the mentality of like, we're here to win this game, and UAB didn't. And that's about as vulnerable as Memphis was going to be on a Sunday, because they were kind of in a similar spot. I know you're a historian of the AAC tournament. Memphis 2 years ago got Houston in a similar spot where Memphis had lost twice in the regular season in tough games, and Memphis was highly motivated. Houston's banged up. They're missing a couple of guys, and Memphis just came in and put it on them. And I thought it was like, that's kind of the similar spot, but no. Like, that's the team you should be mad at, because that's the only reason we're having to deal with the whole North Carolina thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was funny being on, I was on the air on Sunday during the AAC championship game, and then when the bracket got released, and then we had reaction to it. So there were a couple, actually there was only one that I saw. FanDuel was out there with updating live odds of to make or miss the field. And the four teams that they had were Texas, UNC, Xavier, and Indiana.
Okay, so they didn't even have Ohio State.
They didn't have Ohio State. They didn't have San Diego State. They didn't have West Virginia, who ultimately was the one who I think got completely screwed. And by the way, they're about to lose their coach. But it was funny watching UAB Memphis and just seeing the market react as, okay, UAB's up at the half. Now their odds shrink down. But I live in Vegas. The studio for the company that I work for is inside a sports book. And
the best sports book, by the way, if you're going to Vegas.
Look, a lot of the premise that I bet on basically is trusting the sharps and trusting the odds makers, right? I say stinky lines all the time, whatever. What I will say is about Sunday on Selection Sunday, FanDuel, they had no idea. And there was a belief, I think, from some that like, oh, well, if Indiana's minus 3,500, well, they're a lock. Nope. They were minus 3,500 to make the field once everything was wrapped up and the selection show was about to start, and they missed.
Well, it's
UNC was plus 450 to make the field and ultimately got in. Texas was like 4-1 to get in. And, you know, that it's a bit of a learning lesson from that standpoint where, like, look, there are particular markets where there are no power ratings to it, right? Like the NFL draft and things like that. So it was just kind of fascinating to me to watch the betting market react to things. And look, bracketologists, and I'm not throwing them under the bus, the best bracketologists out there do their job based off of the criteria that they've been told over years and years and years. And every single one of the bracketologists had West Virginia in the field, and they didn't get in.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things there. Number one, like let's set aside the political ramifications of it. I do think I haven't seen the final studies, but I would imagine this is one of the least accurate years of bracketology. If you factor in, I'm not even talking about teams. If you factor in seeding.
Well, but Memphis was thought to be like a 7.
Yeah.
And they ended up on a 5 line.
And I remember
Gonzaga was going to be a 6 or a 5, and they ended up in an 8.
And I kept harping, I think everybody is operating the way that it used to be, which is focus on the net, focus on the net, focus on the net. And I chose to believe that wins over bubble was going to matter more. And if you really go through it, wins over bubble mattered more. Now, there have been people like, well, what about Michigan? What you have to realize is Michigan picked up 3 wins that shot them through the roof in terms of the WAB, but they took the vote on Friday for the top 9 seeds in each bracket. So they weren't even like those. If you look at where Michigan was on Thursday, it's kind of similar to a five seed. And to me, like that was a big part of it, was that I think people just, the net impacts so much of how we talk about the sport, but I just think that it was kind of devalued this year.
I think the disheartening thing to me is that it seems like VCU and UC San Diego, I didn't remember off the top of my head. I think Drake, all those teams would have been out if they had not won their conference championship. And
well, I mean, there was I thought it was foolhardy talk, but I'm watching the Big West championship game against Irvine, and
I was there,
and UCSD. There was legitimate talk that both teams were going to be in.
Yeah, you know, we had Rocco Miller, who does a really good job with the Field of 68 guys and has his own website, and you know, he's really plugged in as a bracketologist, and he was making the point on my show Wednesday night that UC Irvine had, I believe, 18 wins on the road this year.
Yep.
And they had a win at UC San Diego. So yeah, there was a push that this could have been a two-bid league if UC Irvine had beaten UC San Diego. But I think that clearly was not going to be the case. I mean, what we found out based off of the seeding was that UC San Diego was not going to get in if they did not win on Saturday night. And obviously, same went with UC Irvine, as they were left out.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of struggle back and forth because it's like, do I think some of those teams are good teams? Yes, but I do wonder how much of their profile gets elevated, because so many of those leagues out there, you basically only have two teams that are serious about winning, and then the rest are just bottom feeders. And this is kind of something that the American actually struggles with, where these teams on paper don't look like much, but when you watch the talent level, again, I'm not saying anyone's mistaking the American for the SEC or the Big Ten, but your eyes tell you this is a different caliber of player than when I'm watching West Coast Conference basketball, Big West basketball. And I think that's kind of what has also, I think that's what been a big part of Memphis's profile, is you watch these games, and yes, these aren't like amazing teams, but they're not teams that you can just roll the ball out and win by 35. Like, there's not Pacific in this conference.
No, I agree. I mean, look, Cal State Fullerton, if we're talking Big West, they're a glorified D3 program.
Yeah.
I mean, they were horrendous this year. I think, and I'm at the point, too, now, where I'm pretty much convinced North Carolina is going to win tonight, because all we've done for the past 48 hours is complain that North Carolina shouldn't be in the field. I think the biggest thing for me is...
The only pushback I'd give to you is, didn't we basically use this exact same logic and take Virginia last year?
Yep. No, you're right. Yeah, Virginia... I was kind of convinced. I'm like, Virginia's probably going to beat Colorado State, and boy, did they not! That was brutal, and they were just horrendous. I think it. I'll make my peace on this, and then you know, move on, because people have heard it plenty of other ways. I don't understand how you can reward North Carolina. Congratulations, you played a hard non-con. You lost every game. You know, you went to Maui and you beat Dayton and lost to Auburn. Look, it was a great game against Michigan State. It was really fun. They lost it, though. You know, you lose to Florida. I guess you're competitive in some of those games, but here's the fact of the matter is there were four teams in the ACC, or three teams that were good in the ACC, and you lost by 13 to Louisville, 17 to Duke, 20 to Clemson, in what was the all-time spot of spots.
Yes.
Where Clemson had just beaten Duke, yes, on their home floor.
And wasn't it a Monday night game?
Yes. Yeah. It was 48 hours later, and you got your butt
kicked.
There are
definitely kids that still had alcohol in their systems.
Oh, 100%. Like, that was like one of my biggest bets of the year, was like UNC plus, I think it opened 6.5, closed like 3.5. It was the ultimate spot of spots. And then they got curb stomped. They lose to Duke again, had the lead in the second half. And it's like, cool. You know, you battled back against a Malik Brown and Cooper Flagless Duke team. And
Well, Malik Brown's been out for most of the year anyway.
Yeah.
I like that spin zone.
But remember how good he was in the finale?
Well, not only that, remember how good Cooper Flagg was in that game at Chapel Hill in the last 10 minutes?
Right. So, look, they're in. There's nothing we can do about it. I hope that
I got
this...
a new angle to be upset about with Carolina. And because I also told Cobb this. I know everybody else was going nuts. It was one of those ones where I felt like I just didn't have the bandwidth or energy to go nuts because it's just like, I felt like if there was a will, there was a way to get Carolina in, and they did it. And so there was kind of an expectation. But you know what actually is annoying me? When did we swap the first four since we've gone to the four-game format? I was always under the impression, because I covered one of these teams, the Tuesday night first four game plays a game on the bracket on Thursday. The Wednesday night first four winner plays a game on Friday. Carolina's playing tonight, and they will play Friday if they were to win.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So I assume...
That's always been the way that it has.
I assume what has happened is... Since we started going to where the top four seeds can request where they go, that has put, because basically all these schools kind of want to go to the same place. Like, it felt like everyone wanted to go to either Raleigh, Providence, or Milwaukee. And so I would assume what happens is all these teams get pushed down, and so you wind up having Seattle and Denver with all these teams because most of the good teams are... east of the Mississippi for the most part, and all these teams don't want to go out west. And so you look at Denver and Raleigh's or Denver and Seattle's regions, and it's like all the fives, the sixes, like they're all there because that's kind of where they wound up getting shipped to. But that actually annoys me. It's like they get to play on Tuesday, get an extra day of rest, and then they're going to go battle on Friday.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was 22. Notre Dame beat Rutgers in overtime. It was St. Patrick's Day. And
shout out Roy yesterday.
And Mike Bray was, I think he said to like Rothstein, like, I'm going to go drink Jameson on the plane. They had like the early game
Thursday.
In San Diego.
Yeah.
I was like, good Lord. And they beat Alabama,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, they beat them. But yeah, I didn't even realize that. But it, to your point, though, it is interesting to note about the geographical stuff because Wisconsin got royally screwed. They're a three seed. There's a first round showdown in Milwaukee, but I guess because of geographical preference, Iowa State and was it Kentucky?
Yes, Kentucky. Because I guess
they both picked Milwaukee over because Kentucky can't play at Rupp.
They can't play in Lexington, and everybody, the Carolina schools or Duke, I think, picked Raleigh. Correct.
Yep.
And then. Is Tennessee in Raleigh?
I think so.
Because I know that's what Tennessee wanted.
But, yeah. So, I mean, you...
I got too many brackets. I got one... My clean sheet bracket doesn't have TV times and doesn't have the locations.
So, Raleigh's on Friday, and
Tennessee's in Lexington.
Tennessee's in Lexington. Okay.
So, Raleigh is Duke and... Hold on. Florida. So Duke and Florida pick Raleigh.
Okay, and I would imagine, yeah. So I mean, like that was kind of. I assume this all stems from the good schools wanting to pick the schools that are seated higher wanting to pick basically the same location. So you wind up with
how do you put Louisville and Lexington?
So I pose this theory. Are we sure they're going to fill it up?
You think Big Blue Nation shows up just to...
The problem is they're in the turn... Like, Big Blue Nation's just going to go to Milwaukee.
Right.
And one of our listeners, Lawrence, tweeted at me, this same situation happened in 13, and Louisville took it over.
Yeah.
I got a hot take. I wasn't that offended that Louisville got an 8. I think the ACC stunk.
Well... Okay, if it stinks, then North Carolina shouldn't be in the field.
Well, I
North Carolina couldn't beat anybody in a terrible conference.
Okay, I guess I can separate. Here's what I'm doing is I'm separating these two things. Number one, I think that Carolina shouldn't be in, but I expect them to get in. I'm not saying that I'm cool with it. but I am definitely going to bet on them.
Yeah, they're going to win tonight.
And
they'll probably beat Ole Miss, too.
I mean, the thing is, though, like, this is one of the data points, and George is an Ole Miss alum. George, what did Ole Miss beat Louisville by? I get it, it's one game, whatnot, but it was like, they beat them by 30.
They waxed them. It was bad.
And Ole Miss is not exactly a team known for, like, they're kind of known for when they win close. They don't really wipe the floor with anyone. And honestly, it's a big problem that I have when everyone's acting like Colorado State's just going to beat Memphis. I'm like, I don't know, man.
Well, I'll say this, and let me double check what it is. But what I've said all year on this show and on my show is that Memphis, as a big favorite, as we all know, doesn't usually fare all that well. Now, there were spots in the season where they did fare decently well, including the championship game. But
yeah, but they didn't cover the other two.
Right. I'm double checking this now as this stupid website's not working. Memphis, 6-2 against the spread as an underdog this year. Like, they get up. They perform well. And obviously,
6-2. I think he's 6-1 and with six outright wins.
I'm just, yeah, I just went to,
didn't the UAB game flip or one,
yeah,
of them?
Yeah, cuz I think the UAB game, not Sunday's game,
the one before that.
The game in Birmingham, like the second to last week of the year, that game flipped and closed as UAB a point favorite.
So, they were, let's see here. They were an underdog at UNLV.
Outright winner.
Underdog at San Fran.
Outright winner.
Underdog against UConn.
Outright winner.
Underdog against Michigan State.
Outright winner.
Underdog against Auburn.
Outright loser and straight up. I mean, ATS.
Underdog at Clemson.
Outright winner.
Underdog against Mississippi State.
And they lost. Okay, so you're right. They're 6-2.
The UAB game, though, you guys are right. That did flip and close as they were a one-point dog and they won that game. So, yeah, the only two games they did not... Yeah, they all right, so let's take it back. They never covered and lost.
Correct.
They won all six games that they were an underdog, and the two games they didn't cover, they lost outright. Look, Colorado State, a team that I bet to win the conference tournament, which was a lovely cash on Saturday, they're playing tremendous. I do wonder, and like, I don't know, maybe this is getting too into the weeds, but like, everything that you hear, Nico Medved has basically signed his deal with Minnesota.
I pointed this out on Monday. And again, I don't know if it's as drastic as it is in football, but I can't believe that. I find it hard to believe it's not going to be somewhat of a distraction. And yeah, honestly, in the back of my mind, those ADs know what's happening. And no school is more NCAA plugged in than Indiana. And I can't help but wonder if Indiana was like, we're taking West Virginia's coach. And the compromise is like, all right, we'll leave West Virginia.
Now that's a conspiracy.
There you go.
Right there.
Hey, who was the previous Miles Brand, president of Indiana? Was the president of the NCAA? I'm telling you, there's a lot of overlap there. Where are those offices?
Indianapolis, right?
Uh-huh. I'm not saying like I 100% believe it, but like I don't think it's like unimaginable.
I tell you what though, just from like an entertainment standpoint, seeing PJ Haggerty and Neek Clifford on the floor together, those two dudes are freaking awesome. Like Neek Clifford is playing at a ridiculous level right now, Colorado State's stud guard. Like his game right now is just out of control.
I get Mahaney vibes. Memphis is not the type of team Colorado State wants to see.
I don't disagree.
The concern, though, for Memphis is I think it's almost a certainty that you're not going to see Tyrese Hunter, your lead guard who has the most tournament experience. And then the other thing is Dante Harris, who's been their backup point guard, he's questionable as well.
Isn't Dane dealing with injuries too?
Dane's banged up because he's a big, but Dane will be on the floor. Dane was banged up. Like I think at one point it felt like he popped his shoulder back into place and then just ran the floor. I'm not worried about him.
No, I wasn't. I'm not worried about him. It's
no, he is. Yes, he is dealing with shoulder. I would imagine everything. And his role's increased, and he's been phenomenal the second half.
What's your, if you remove Memphis and Colorado State,
okay,
what's your favorite matchup in the first round?
How can it not be self Calipari? For the right to play Patino?
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
I get that's sports writer-y storyline, but like, how can that not be? And both teams have been disappointing this year.
Massively.
But, I mean, are you really telling me that you only have one screen on Saturday and that game's on and you're going to actively not watch it?
Well, Saturday, I mean, if it's St. John's.
Or, I'm sorry, yeah. Whatever. They're Friday,
they're
right?
They're on Thursday night.
They're the primetime Thursday
it's
night.
It's a primetime CBS game.
I mean, I get
it. I'm going to watch it. I'll say this. The primetime Thursday night slate is juicy. Because you've got Arkansas, Kansas, Yale, Texas A&M, and Drake, Missouri. Like, that is tremendous.
I think probably the others for consideration are probably Louisville, Creighton.
Yeah, that's the first game.
I also think
in that window, I think High Point Purdue has the both teams don't really play defense, and High Point can score, but man, they are allergic to defense. And I do wonder if Trey Kaufman Wren is just going to go absolutely nuclear on High Point.
I think
VCU BYU.
Yeah,
I think that's really good.
I had that one. BYU plays fun.
I think VCU will drag you into the mud. They're super physical.
I mean, McNeese Clemson, I do wonder every single year McNeese kind of seems to be the trendy, but literally Will Wade is a Clemson alum, and if Burnell were to take another job, you know that that's the job he wants.
Yeah, Wade's just waiting to see the dominoes fall. He will not be the head coach of McNeese next year, guaranteed. I think New Mexico Marquette is
I kind of have – so I'm in – like of all the pools you have, mm-hmm. I have – there's one where it's like you pick one team from each seed line. I kind of low-key think Maryland's in for a dogfight.
I was texting with a buddy of mine who knows the WAC pretty well. And
it's bad. Don't get me wrong.
The WAC's bad, and he just said he got some weird vibes about that Grand Canyon team. And like,
I kind of like that. That makes me like him even more.
I really like Maryland, and it has nothing to do with where I'm from. I'm not even a Maryland fan.
No, no, no.
I just think they're awesome.
Well, the scariest thing is betting against something called the Crab Five. Like that's always going to put fear into your heart. All right, we got to take a break so that we can get Joe Rexroad on the program. Let's talk some SEC teams in the field, and maybe I'll ask him a couple of draft questions as well. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Joe Rexrode writes about college football for The Athletic. He's also the co-host of Robbie and Rexrode on ESPN 102.5 The Game in Nashville on Twitter on X at Joe Rexrode. Joe, I know I got you on to talk college hoops, but I'm a Giants fan. Are the Titans going to trade the number one pick?
I don't think so. I don't think they are. I think they're if you go through the offseason and you're a veteran QB choice as Brandon Allen, then, I think that probably means you're drafting a starter. And Will Levis is not starting. So, yeah, I think they're sticking and taking Cam Ward. Now, maybe the Giants, maybe the Giants decide to go nuts and give him, like, next year's first and a second next year and a third this year. Maybe there's a certain price where you can't refuse. But at this point, I think the Titans are taking Cam Ward.
How much do you like Cam?
I like Cam. I actually, if I had to choose among quarterbacks in this draft, I would take Shedeur Sanders because I value just consistent accuracy above almost anything else. But Cam Ward has a bigger arm. I think he has more arm talent, quote-unquote. And remember, yep. Will Levis also has a lot of, quote-unquote, arm talent, and it hasn't done much for him.
Cam did complete passes in college.
Yeah, that is true. But there's a similar –
yes.
Sort of concern there, which is, man, are you going to get the hero ball out of his game? Because they really couldn't out of Will Levis's game. So it's interesting that they would be kind of going there again. But, you put together the good highlight tape of Cam Ward? Absolutely. It's very good.
All right, so let's get into the SEC teams that you saw this weekend. And I think really the question top of everyone's mind, are you buying into Florida?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have been, but this weekend really hammered at home. First time I was able to see them live, and they just have everything, they really do. And I know that there are times in this tournament you say that about a team, and then they're out in the round of 32. And boy, yeah, I still think UConn has enough talent and the coaching to make it potentially interesting, by the way. But yeah, they've got Walter Clayton Jr., I think, is finally people waking up to, like, he's one of the top two, three guards in the country. Then you have Elijah Martin is such a great add for them. He just brings such an edge on both ends for them. So they got three guys who can get you shots, get their own shot whenever you need it, and all hit shots off the catch. And then you just have the deepest, most imposing front court in the country. Plus there's like the 7'9", 305-pound dude who's just sitting over there on the bench. But, they have everything you need. And, Tennessee, known as a tough team, and obviously they play defense, they've had rebounding ups and downs this year, some. But, like, when they got a defensive rebound against Florida the other day, like, it was seriously like a miracle. It's insane, man. I just think Florida, if they stay focused and just stay consistent with what they've been doing, they're going to be very difficult to beat for anybody in this field.
Yeah, I was mentioning it with Tim, who's with me now. I wonder with Florida, there are some trends that would go against them. It is the team that everyone feels like, it feels like they have the momentum behind them. But they have a young coach who's not won a tournament game. But I just kept, like, going, and everyone's looking at the potential matchup in the second round. I was like, didn't we kind of have these same questions the first time Hurley took UConn, or the second time, I guess, Hurley took UConn with his first national title? I know they were a 4 seed versus a 1 seed, but that was kind of the team that had a lull in the early part of conference play, but they started to play really well. They were really getting it together. They had a front court that you couldn't match up with. the perimeter play was outstanding. Like, I just kind of wonder if maybe that's what we're seeing with Florida.
Yeah. And frankly, I expect if it is Florida UConn, I think they're going to win by 20. But yeah. It is one of those things where at least that team does have some guys who, if they have, you know, just a special day.
Yeah, if Liam McNeely goes off, like he, yes. We can see him, he can have a 40-point game and there's nothing you can do.
And Caravan hits a bunch of three, you know, yeah. you could at least see it, conceive it. But, you know, I mean, and that is a good point on Golden, and, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, the weird thing about Florida, of course, like he scheduled this year like he didn't think he was going to be that
yeah.
good, you know?
Scheduled to win.
So, like, yeah, starting in conference play, you're just like, I don't know, they look good, but who the heck knows? But, I mean, by the end, winning at Auburn, winning at Alabama, doing what they did in Nashville, man, a wagon.
You know, there's a lot of intrigue, certainly, at the bottom pod of the West region where you will likely get Patino versus either Self or Calipari. But just that 7-10 matchup, what are we expecting from Arkansas? Because Fland is practicing now, and we know from a talent standpoint, he's the best player on that roster, but they lost their first five conference games when he was in the lineup. Thiro's out. Ivasic is banged up. Like, where is Arkansas at from a health standpoint heading into this game against Kansas?
Yeah, it's a great question on Flan, too, because, I mean, look, they were better without him. And yeah. he's a really good player, but I just think DJ Wagner, when you're DJ Wagner and you know that you're going to be in the game, you can make a mistake here or there, and you're going to stay in the game, I think that's a huge deal. I think that's a huge deal for a kid like that, and I think he really flourished. Obviously, Thiro, that's just a tough situation. I will say one of the best things for them to have in Nashville is Jonas Adu finally started to look like the guy that they paid for, you know, in Nashville. And basically, I mean, Big Z was unplayable. He's banged up, but also he was just unplayable defensively. Every opponent was like just going to his chest, and you know, and you get, it doesn't matter how tall he is. You moved him off the spot, and you got a layup. So I do think it was very good for them to have Adu step up. I've been puzzled all year. After what he did at Tennessee last year, about why it isn't working out for him. So I do like that a lot. I think Arkansas is going to win that game. I do. I mean, I'm down on Kansas. Yep, and now the big key will be, I mean, as Adu has got to have a great game, because the one thing Kansas can do, they throw the ball into Hunter Dickinson. Now, on the other side of the floor, you know, you get him in the ball screens all day, and it's a, you know, you can have a lot of success. But if he can hold his own in that matchup, I really think they're better.
I also think to a certain degree, we kind of saw this with Kansas last year, and I know it's not the exact same team, but there are similar pieces. I felt like they spent like the last month of the season telling us, like, we're not that into this. And I feel like every time I watch Kansas play, that's kind of what I think. That's kind of what I'm left thinking.
Yeah, well, they had certainly had a few performances where you're like, what is happening with these guys? I mean, it did seem to right the ship a little bit with a couple of their games late. So, you know, and obviously Bill Self is a great coach, but this is a great example of, I mean, look, preseason, like, everyone thought this was the best team, most talented team, and you just don't know when you're putting together these new teams out of the portal how it's all going to go together. It just hasn't been the right pieces.
Have people soured on Auburn too much?
Probably, and I've been a little guilty too. I'm worried, you know, because first of all, I think Bruma, you watch Auburn all year. Go back and watch like Auburn from like before the ankle. I still think he looks like a totally different player.
Totally agree, yeah.
And good for him toughing it out, but also, man, you should have taken another week or two. But, you know, regardless, he played well in Nashville. You know, they didn't hit some shots that they normally hit, or they'd probably come back and beat Tennessee. And then you just have the volatility, which of course starts with Chad Baker-Mazzara, you know, and what's going to happen there. Just the whole dynamic. And I think there's so much pressure on them because of Yale last year. And you can almost see it on Bruce Pearl's face after the loss to Tennessee. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, this is still a tremendous team. And you figure that they're gonna learn. So many of these guys took part in that awful experience against Yale last year. And, you know, you figure you get that first game, you have a feel-good blowout against a, you know, a 16, and you kind of get going back in the right direction. So I do think – now, I've seen a fair amount of people. It seems like it's like Auburn or Michigan State is every Final Four I've seen, you know. So, I mean, I think you know, there's still some people that haven't started them. But I have heard some things that I'm like, man, I mean, they're still really, really good. And I will say, I'm in Lexington actually right now, so I'll be here this weekend. And I mean, Louisville here in against Auburn, the way Louisville has been playing at times lately, that could be interesting. If they get there, but they're right. Sleeping on Creighton too.
Yeah, Creighton's got some. I mean, there's tendencies from Creighton that make me think that they're soft, and then you know you see a Steven Ashworth you know hit big threes and Kalkbrenner can
I don't think they're
plays.
Soft. I think they're slow.
That's fair.
You know, I mean, sometimes like when you talk about like think about in football like bad tackling teams. A lot of times people think, oh, they don't have toughness. It's like no, a lot of times they're slow, so they can't get to where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, look, they
definitely. I definitely would be interested in seeing Kalkbrenner and Broom if that's, yes. You know, I mean, how much would it probably be Kalkbrenner and Cardwell a lot, but, you know, like that's, those opponents with a big length advantage obviously can really bother him.
Yeah, I think when you look at Creighton teams in the past, they've been elite 3-point shooting teams. This team is not elite
no.
at 3-point shooting. I mean, Ashworth's pretty darn good from long range. When you look at Alabama, you draw Robert Morris. I think that's a fascinating possible second round matchup if they play a team like St. Mary's. But once again, injuries. You look at Cooper Flagg. Hopefully, he's fine to go for Duke. But you know, Grant Nelson. What are we expecting from Grant Nelson? And you know, Alabama. I said it earlier in the show. When they're at their best, I think they could beat anyone in the country. And case in point, they went to Auburn and won. But when they're off, I mean, heck, you look at it last year, I think they were very fortunate to beat Grand Canyon in the second round. So
yeah.
What do you make of this Alabama team, especially with Nelson's injury status?
I mean, I think that's a huge – I mean, that's, to me, the whole key. Because he's been playing so well lately. I mean, look what he did at Auburn. They don't win that game if he doesn't just start dunking on everybody in that game. I mean, the way he's been attacking, he's kind of, you know, obviously he's had a rough season from the three line, and he just started putting it on the deck more. And I think that, you know, that's really a big key for them to have him available and to have him attacking like that. And I'm with you. Yeah, they absolutely can. They can be overwhelming. I mean, look at how they've looked. And I know Kentucky's banged up, so, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt. But still, with LeBaron Filon playing like that, the way he can get going, and they just have so many guys who they can protect the rim, they can rim run and, you know, just play above the rim, you know, just play the lob game, and then obviously all the shooters. And, you know, some of it is Sears, too. Like, he's a great player. But he also can just go into these – he can have one of those 3-for-17 games, you know, and that's the game where you worry about them, you know, being really vulnerable. But if Nelson can be okay, I absolutely – I would love to see that team at their best against Duke. I think that would be a tremendous matchup.
Along the same lines as Auburn, as we speak here with Joe Rexroad, I kind of think – are we getting a little too nitpicky with Tennessee? Like, even in that Florida game, like you said, it felt like a miracle if they got a rebound. Like, I felt like they were going to get run out of the building twice, three times maybe in that game, and they kept fighting, they kept fighting. I really like how Ziegler's playing right now. I just kind of wonder if maybe they're the forgotten man and maybe we're sleeping on them a little too much.
I think that's fair. I'm with you on Ziegler. I mean, he's, you know, it's almost like just that little brief injury, all of a sudden he gets his legs back, and he's been shooting well since
yeah.
then. And so, I mean, you think about last year with Tennessee. Yes, they had Connect, so they could throw him the ball, get out of the way. But Ziegler couldn't hit a shot. Jordan Gainey couldn't hit a shot. Like, no one else could hit a – I mean, that Texas game was awful last year. I had to cover that thing in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, I really like how Gainey's playing. Obviously, they need Lanier going, too. If those three guys are all hitting shots, the toughness is still there, all that stuff, Okpara. I will say the one, to me, the key for them, and a guy who did not play well at all, is Igor Milicic. He really was disappointing in Nashville. And he's such a difference maker who can space the floor. He's a good passer. He's just an all-around good, skilled player. But it seems like at times he shrinks a little bit, you know, especially when he's got some opponents kind of physically challenging him. And he made some mistakes, you know, late in that Tennessee game where – I'm sorry, late in the Auburn game, where it's just like you cannot have these mistakes. He ran a play wrong, or else it's a slip for a dunk, and he pops out instead. I mean, Rick Barnes, I think, almost used profanity in that moment.
No!
I mean, it was close, I think he said shucks, but
cheese and crackers. He almost dropped a cheese and crackers.
Or like I guess you know, Hubert Davis says, "Sit the fart down." Yeah. So I mean, but
funky butt loving.
But if Igor can show up, I know I'm with you. Like, you're talking about a top three defense, and like this is one of his most efficient offensive teams. Speaking of Rick Barnes, so I really and just man. Man, Ziegler is such a warrior. To me, he's a first-team All-American because of what he does on both ends and what a freaking winner he is. And I just think it's going to be you're going to have to really drive a stake through his heart to knock him out of this tournament in his last go-around.
All right, let's get to we'll wrap up here. Is there a team from the league seeded sixth or worse that you think could make a second weekend? So that would be – Ole Miss, Mizzou, that would be Mississippi State.
Texas. Oklahoma.
OU, Georgia. I think I hit them all.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss and Missouri both come to mind for me. You know, I still...
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.